right, everybody, welcome back to the Fantasy Hockey Hacks Podcast. I'm Devin Davidson, your host. With me, as always, Bruce Gunther and John Enns, my co-hosts. What's going on, guys?
Home, clocking in from work today, so.
Of course, and joining us, our special guest today, Andy Sutton. Andy, thank you for being here. We do really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and chat with us about Ribeiro and hockey and all that fun stuff. We don't usually get guests, kind of with your background and stuff. So we're really excited to sit down and talk to you and hear what you have to say.
Yeah, likewise. It's great to connect with you guys for sure. We'll have some fun today.
So just for our listeners, Andy is the CEO of Ribeiro Hockey and a 14-year NHL veteran. He played with the San Jose Sharks, Minnesota Wild, the Atlanta Thrashers, the New York Islanders, the Ottawa Senators, the Anaheim Ducks, and the Oilers. Put up some PIMs in your time, hey? 1,185 PIMs.
Well, yeah, I mean, I always try to walk the line. You know, it's, I guess you want to play hard and not get caught, but some, you know, oftentimes they get you.
That's awesome. I had a question, you know, later in the show, but I'll just ask it now. Like, were you always kind of a physical player? Was that something that was sort of coached, or like, you know, what is that just kind of the way you play?
It kind of evolved, you know. I think being a bigger guy, you know, and I had to figure out so many different ways to rebrand myself and to, you know, find a niche to just survive, really, you know. And I can't tell you how many times, you know, there was times where I felt like you had to almost take on a new identity. But like, one thing that always had to carry through, and you're a big guy, I think, is you have to play physically. You've got to stick up for your teammates, you know. And then the blocking shot stuff for me just sort of evolved naturally too. You know, it became more and more valuable, I guess, to be a good shot blocker. So I just, you know, I took that on the chin. Sorry for the pun, but it just took it as a personal point of pride, and then kind of all blended into the player that I became in the end.
Good stuff. Well, maybe just start off, tell our listeners a bit about yourself, kind of where you're from, education, what do you like to do outside of hockey, stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. So I was born in London, Ontario. I grew up most of my life in Burlington, Ontario. We moved there shortly thereafter and played all my minor hockey there. My family moved to Kingston when I was 14, and they've been there ever since. I played some hockey in Kingston. I didn't make my, I guess it's a hockey podcast, we should keep it hockey centered, but I didn't make my my midget team. So I actually went and played Junior B in a small town called Gananoque in Eastern Ontario. You know, I was like 15 and 16 years old. I played there 2 years, but as a 15-year-old, I was, you know, playing against and with guys with mustaches and jobs. So I always laugh about that. But, you know, that was kind of a gateway for me. It was a good place for me to learn from older players. We had a great coach there named Wilf Johnson, helped me a lot, guided me a lot. And, really from there, I got an opportunity to play in a summer league, which was kind of like a development league, and we played in some tournaments, and I had one tournament in particular. I had in the first game, I still remember this guy named Ken Boone. He was a draft pick in the OHL, and he was a big to-do back then, but he picked a fight with me the first game, and it didn't go well for Ken. And I remember the last rest of the games in the tournament, nobody came within 5 feet of me, and I won player of the tournament, scored a bunch of goals and stuff. But I at that tournament, there was a guy there named Dave Barrett. And Dave was the head coach for the St. Michael's Buzzers at the time, was a Junior B program, and was really probably one of the top two or three in the whole country if you wanted to try to get a scholarship. So I was fortunate enough to take my, you know, I know they don't have 13th grade anymore, but I had my OAC grade 13 year at St. Mike's and went to school there and played for the team, and was fortunate enough to get a scholarship to Michigan Tech. I went there on a partial scholarship. This is all I could get at the time, and converted the rest to academics. I started out in studying biology, and switched to an engineering major when I figured out you could go to medical school with an engineering major. I didn't really ever think that hockey was going to be the thing for me that was going to last as long as it did. So I always had in my mind like what I was going to do after school, and very lackluster career throughout. I actually got a scholarship as a forward, got converted to a defenseman my sophomore year. Junior year, I'd had a surgery, and I got offered a job with the U.S. Navy to do an internship summer before my senior campaign, and decided to stay on campus and work out and get ready for my last season, not knowing what it would be, if it would be my last season or what it would be. So I really just kind of let it all hang out, and I won WCHA Defensive Player of the Year, and I was never drafted in the NHL despite my size and at that time how valuable like big defensemen, especially big defensemen who could skate, were. I never got drafted, so I had 14 NHL teams try to sign me the day after my last game, and went from having $6 in my bank account to getting offered the league maximum as an undrafted player. So it was a really obviously a big, you know, life changing event. And then from there, you know, just, you know, we kind of touched on it a little earlier, just constant reinvention, you know, to be able to stick around for 14 seasons and two lockout years. So really it was like a, you know, like 16 years. It was a long run, and I can't believe it. I felt so happy to finish in Edmonton too. It was a really, really cool deal to kind of culminate around all that great young talent. And you know, I turned as much into probably a player coach as anything my last few years, but it was a great career. And I look back on it very fondly.
Yeah. You've got a really interesting story. Like not a lot of guys will play junior B and make their way up through college and go undrafted. And then too, like you went in the expansion draft to Minnesota, right? Back in 2000.
I did. Yeah, it was a great experience too. You know, I look back on it, and I mean, I signed with the Sharks and they had big expectations for me, and I had a big chip on my shoulder and I was going to make it. And really the reason I left there is because I called Dean Lombardi a chicken shit for not playing me in the playoffs, and he sent me home. And so they exposed me in the expansion. That's a true story. I can't make that up.
That's awesome.
And I went in a few years later and, you know, apologized for my behavior. And I think it was well received that I thought of it to do that. But still, I mean, I was full of piss and vinegar and just, you know, thought I was better than guys they had. And I wasn't going to take no for an answer. But that's really what led me to Minnie. And that was a really cool experience too there. I mean, there's so many forks in the road. You know, and there I went in as a defenseman, and Jacques was putting me in front of the net on the power play, and Jacques Lemaire, and then he was like, oh, this guy can play forward, and so we're going to turn him back into a forward. Well, I went to Mike Ramsey, who was the defense coach there, and said, hey, Mike, this is in my second season there. I think I'm meant to be a defenseman, you know, to really succeed in the NHL. And he looked me square in the face and he said, you'll never be a defenseman in this league. And that was probably all the fire I needed to get out of Minnie. So I went in the next day and asked for a trade, and Doug Risebrow, and he was kind enough to trade me to Atlanta. And that's really where things took shape for me. You know, I had the opportunity when Bob Hartley came in specifically, and I still remember he sat down with me at the first meeting he had, and he said, I've been told you can play and you have lots of potential. He said, we're going to find out. I'm going to play you 30 minutes a night and you can slit your own throat. So, but he did. And thankfully things went well. And I succeeded in that role. And I think things really sort of catapulted from there.
So I was going to ask you, like, what was that transition like going from a forward? You played forward most of your career until you got to college, I think, right? And then they moved you to D. So what was it like going from forward to D and then transitioning into the NHL?
It was an adjustment, I think, especially in college, because I also played in the WCHA and we played on Olympic ice sheets, right? So it was like, you know, and there was a lot of small, fast, shifty players there. But I think in retrospect, playing there and being a bigger player and learning how to defend in that environment helped me a lot, you know. And I worked hard, really hard, when I was there to be stronger than most, and worked on foot speed and all that type of stuff. So I think all of that, and I always had pretty good hands for a big guy. So I think it was like, it was easy for the coaches to say, oh, well, this is a perfect, you know, catch. I can move him up here. He can hit, he can fight, he can score the odd goal. I guess he's perfect. And it really wasn't where I wanted to be, you know, and I didn't like not playing a lot either. And I, you know, I always felt better if I was in the game more and got more minutes. So, you know, I think just, it was an easy transition back and forth later in my career, but I think from a business standpoint, I made the determination that to have longevity and sustainability in the NHL, like, I needed to be a defenseman. And I was right in retrospect. I mean, if I hadn't done that at that time, I don't know what would have happened. You know, maybe I would have waffled back and forth a little bit, you know, with the Wild, and then maybe nobody wants me, and then maybe I'm down in the minors and maybe it's over. Who knows? it's all sliding doors in the end.
So I was curious, just going back to Atlanta, like, you played almost 5 years there. What was it like in such a non-traditional hockey market? Like, you know, that team kind of struggled to stick around and get any traction in that market. So I'm just kind of curious what your experience was like as a player.
Well, you know, it's, we had loyal fans, you know, and really the last season I played there, we ended up you know, finally making the playoffs for the first time as a franchise. And I felt proud of that. You know, like the, there was a lot of evolution throughout my time there. And, you know, I really played for a lot of either expansion teams or teams and definitely in the bottom third. That became part of who I was as a player. And for whatever reason, that's where I resided. And in a lot of ways, you know, I feel thankful for that. And if I hadn't been in Atlanta and had the opportunities I had, like maybe I would have never, people wouldn't have noticed, okay, this guy can play, he can do this, he can do that. And it probably extended my career. So it's just like, yeah. I don't know, it sucked early on losing almost every night. And I remember like a couple of years, we could hardly get out of our own end. I mean, couldn't make three passes in a row, like to do anything. Yeah. It was rough, but, you know, it's all, you just, as an athlete, I think you're always just doing your best, you know, and you're always trying to find some optimism and something to look forward to, or something that angers you enough that you can use that as energy. So you're always like trying to adjust to find the motivation to go out and do your best and play your best. And I believe that's what everyone's trying to do. So if a team is bad, it's usually not for lack of trying. It's usually lack of talent and or lack of leadership, or, you know, lack of somebody who really knows how to tie it all together. And that's another thing. I mean, you can have a great team and a poor coach and it just doesn't go well. So right. It's kind of, you know, this to the teams that make the playoffs is one thing. Right now it's like, what, 50% of the league doesn't make it almost. Yeah. And then from there, like, you can see very clearly the teams that make it. And then the teams that end up winning. I mean, it's like night and day, right?
Oh,
I mean,
definitely.
So a lot of things have to align, and I think that's why our championship's the hardest one to win.
I would agree 100%. So saying all that, what was your favorite team, or who was your favorite team to play for throughout your career?
Well, I mean, I have great memories of everyone one way or another. You know, as I said, the time in Atlanta was very formative for me and important. But then, you know, I got a chance to go from there to Long Island to play in New York for 3 years, which was super cool. And then, you know, from there, I got to go for a cup of coffee in Ottawa. And I hadn't played back home in Canada to that point in my career. And with my family being in Kingston, and they came to almost every game. And that was really awesome to go there and, like, just such a top-notch franchise. I had a great time there. And then, you know, at that point, I was at a stage in my career where I'd played a long time, and I just asked my agent to get me a job with the Ducks of the Kings because I wanted to go to work in flip-flops every day. And I had a one-year deal offer with the Kings and a two-year deal offer with the Ducks, and I took that one. And then lo and behold, you know, I'm poised to play the top pair with Lubomir Vasnovsky, and I shatter my thumb in the fight the first game of the year, and I could never really get back in the fold and didn't play that well when I came back, and then they traded me to Edmonton. And I really loved my time at Edmonton. I think we were the hottest team in the league that year through the first 10 or 15 games, and, you know, it didn't go well in the end, but it wasn't for lack of trying again, and it was enough for me to get another year out of the deal. And the only thing that's strange about my career is the way it ended. You know, I can remember that last season I played in Edmonton, not having played for maybe 4 or 6 weeks at the end of the year because they were playing all the young guys because we weren't going to make the playoffs. And I remember they came up and tapped me on the shoulder on the plane ride to Vancouver for the last game after, I think we were in Calgary the night before or something like that. And they said, "Hey, Sutsy, you're going to have to play tonight." We had three guys go down. I was like, "You're kidding, right? Like, I haven't played a game before." So I play that game, and really, like, the mission was to just don't get injured. You know, I had 14 surgeries in 16 years. So I was looking just to go into the wow. summer and be strong. So I end up, you know, you play that game, and it's not like the way I would have wanted it to end if I had known it was going to be the last game, because I had the next season coming up that I thought I was going to be playing. Yeah. And I ended up having a horrible injury training that summer, and then they basically locked the season out, and that was it. So it just kind of ended in a very anticlimactic fashion.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's a rough way to end it. Oh, man. I was going to ask you, so how much does the weather come into play, like, as a player, when you're looking at teams you're going to sign with? Does that play a big factor, the destination?
Well, yeah, sometimes. I mean, I think playing in a hockey locale is the best, but sometimes, you know, maybe like me, if you played a long time and you're like, all right, it sounds nice to go to work in flip-flops, and it wasn't like the Ducks were a bad team. I mean, Teemu Selanne, Saku Koivu, Ryan Getzlaff, Corey Perry, yeah. Bobby Ryan. I mean, there was a real team there, and so it was kind of a best of all worlds type of situation. And really, like, I at that time I was thinking, okay, like maybe I want to live in California when I'm done playing, because I started there with the Sharks, and I love the weather in California. Sure. And I ended up living there. I just moved just to Nashville, Tennessee, just last November. So I ended up living in California for a little over a decade. So it definitely was home for a while there.
So I guess playing in Anaheim and knowing Corey Perry, did you watch much hockey last year with him going to the Cup final, I guess the last couple of years, right, with Dallas and with Montreal?
Yeah, I did. I tend to watch the odd game during the season. I'm busy. Work is really busy, and I live on a homestead, like, so I have a little farm here, and then I've got a 4.5 year old, so I'm pretty jammed up, and definitely during the week. But we watched the playoffs a good bit. We actually went to a few Preds games in this last run here against Carolina. It was pretty cool. But yeah, I got a chance to. I mean, Corey's just, I mean, he just figures out a way to get stuff done. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's just, he knows how to score, certainly better than most, and knows how to get in there and get the job done. So it's cool to see that he's still cranking.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with him the last couple of years, just what he's been able to do at his age. Who is the funniest teammate you ever played with? Is there one guy that just kind of cracked you up?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been so many, but, like, you know, right away, like Jamie McLennan, Noodles comes to mind. You know, he was either the funniest guy or the most serious guy. Like, if he was playing, I still remember he'd get to the rink, like, literally, I think, like 4 hours before the game. And I can remember, like, because normally he's never not talking. He's usually always chirping somebody. And when he's playing, he doesn't talk to anybody. So it's like you couldn't believe that this guy could actually stop talking. And he'd sit in his stall, and I remember he'd just sit there and have his pads together. He'd keep pushing them together. And he'd look at him, he'd be like, this guy's Looney Tunes. Like, you can't be like that. He should just be that way. He should just be chirping everybody and go play hockey. Like, I don't think you have to be so serious and tied up. But he was hilarious. I mean, there were so many guys that were funny, and I was always at the front of the line there, usually with people too. And I had, you know, George Peros and I had a lot of fun in Anaheim. He's a hilarious guy, and we became good friends there. And there's always a crew of funny guys on every team, for sure.
That's awesome. Who is the toughest opponent you ever had to play against throughout your career? Is there one guy that you just, man, I don't want to fight this guy, or he's hard to play against? Like, what was?
Well, I mean, the fights are one thing, you know. I think, you know, and especially years when I was in the top pair, you know, playing against certain guys like, you know, Peter Forsberg rings a bell, you know, Jaromir Jagr, yep. Alex Ovechkin in his prime with Washington. Like, when I was in Atlanta, we played them 8 times a year, you know, and then we go play Tampa, and we've got Le Cavalier, San Luis Prosper. I mean, there were lines and players that were just unbelievable. And Brad Richards, I mean, that team was insane. You know, I'm trying to think who else has really left a mark, you know, for me. You know, Marian Hossa, played with him and against him. He's so dynamic, multi-dynamic, you know. And then, you know, you can't not talk about Sidney Crosby. I mean, I can remember one time I puck rimmed from the left side around to basically his right side, and I was on left D, and I kind of, you know, he's coming down the wall. So I'm like, I'm going to tee him up here, right? And he came into the puck, and basically, you know, the puck's rimming up, and instead of going forwards, he cut backwards on his backhand and picked it up off the wall. And before I could even turn around, he was like 4 feet from the net. They didn't score, but like I can remember that time. And then another time, it was in a 2-on-2, and the puck flipped out to Pascal Dupuis, and he took a slap shot on net, and there was a rebound, and I had Sid like right in front of me, like 2-3 feet, like playing it pretty good. And before I could even like get pivoted to turn around, he was like a foot or two behind me, and like ended up getting the rebound, and I think he even scored. And I was just like, man, this is a special human being, you know. It's just it's another level of player, for sure.
Yeah, he's incredible. I think we're all big fans of Sid. He's some of the things he's done throughout his career.
Oh, and he's a hell of an ambassador for the game. I mean, let's be honest, he takes a lot of flack, but I mean, he's a poster boy, you know. He's lived up to it, you know, and that's a big responsibility.
Yeah, for sure it is. Just going back to Ovechkin quickly, what's it like staring down an Ovi slap shot? I got to ask, as a defenseman, like, do you want a flamingo or like, is it?
Well, no, you don't. And I mean, I never did. And he, you know, he doesn't have the hardest shot. I mean, you've seen in some of the hardest shot competition, he doesn't shoot the puck hard, but he shoots it quick and he gets it off faster than everybody else. Yep. But I can remember one time in particular, I was killing a 5-on-3 in New York, and Jack Hillen was my defense partner. And there was a shot on net and there was a rebound that kicked out. And you remember Ovi played the offside point basically. And the rebound kicked out, and it kicked out, like, I think literally maybe 4 feet above the hash marks. And the puck was waffling a little bit, and he came in, like, he was already coming in, but it basically popped right to him and he hammered it, and it missed the net. It hit my partner, Jack, right in the face. And I was standing, we were like 4 feet apart, and it hit Jack right in the face, shattered his jaw, bunch of teeth gone, like, just being that close and seeing that, like, hit somebody like that, you're just like, oh my goodness. Like, I mean, he just rifles it, you know. And thank goodness normally he knows where it's going, but when it's you know, flopping around like that, it's tough. But I mean, I sadly, I was on the wrong side of a few too many well-placed Ovechkin one-timers. that power play is second to none up there. I mean, they've definitely had a better power play than anybody else for a really long time, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're incredible. You know, just speaking of that power play, how likely do you think it is that Ovi breaks Gretzky's goal scoring record?
Oh man, I don't know. It doesn't seem like it should even happen. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I sort of feel like his records should be just left alone. We should almost like retire people before it happens.
I'm okay with that.
The great one is the great one, and everyone else is a different deal. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I'd agree with that. All right. You may have answered this already, but I was just reading on hockeyfights.com. Apparently you had 50 plus fights in your career. Is there one guy, like, who was the hardest fight you ever had to deal with? Is there anyone that sticks out in your mind?
Yeah, there were a lot. I mean, I can remember one time, and, you know, a lot of times fights were reciprocal, and sometimes you got on the wrong side of a start of a fight or something. But I remember fighting Scott Parker a bunch of times. I mean, how that guy was so tough, you know, when I was in San Jose, and I think thinking about Colt Knorr, I remember I hammered Ryan Callahan. This was in New York, so you had the big rivalry there. Callahan's their captain, and I just lit him up, like, up the left side, in my patented spider web over there. Before I could even get turned around, like, Colton had a hold of me, and the punches were coming so hard and so fast, and he was hammering my helmet, thank goodness. But, like, it was like ching, 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 like this. Like, you can't even look up. Like, if you even try to look up to do anything, you're going to eat the next one, and down you go. So, I mean, he's a guy that means business, but I also heard he's got like 15 plates in his right hand. So it probably doesn't hurt him too bad to punch helmets, but they're, you know, I fought certainly, and fought to either protect my role or protect teammates or whatever. Or if I'm frustrated, but I think the guys that do it for a living that excelled at it, you know, are just another level. And like getting to play with George Parros, I mean, a Princeton grad, right? And then you look at a guy that, honestly, was he fighting like 40, 42 times a year? I mean, think about that.
It's a lot.
And I literally never saw him get punched in the face once that whole season. I think he had 40 fights. I mean, he never had a shiner. He never had stitches in his face. He never had a broken nose. Jeez. He won more fights. I mean, he just so smart, like the way he fought. Like Sean Thornton, you know, same thing. Like some of these guys that really understood, I think, probably more principles of judo and other things, you know, seem to ferret more well than guys like Todd Fedoruk or, you know, the Jeff Odgers of the world that stand in there and do the punch in the face contests, you know.
That's awesome. Favorite coach? Who's your favorite coach to play for throughout your career?
Honestly, Tom Rennie. Like, I think Tom Rennie is an incredible human being, and I think he was an amazing coach. He had he had such a great way of communicating. And I think the problem was that team at that time was probably too young. If it was a more veteran team, I don't think Tom would have ever gone anywhere, you know, and even having, even having Bucky and Steve Smith there. I mean, it was a really great trio of coaches, and it's just unfortunate the way the nature of the business goes. But Tom is one of the coolest guys I ever met, probably, and just such a wonderful human, and really cares for people, and also has a nice way of treating people like professionals. And he's definitely by far and away the best coach I had.
That's good. That was always the impression I got anyway, from a distance, yeah. Right? He just seemed like a stand up guy.
He is. He's rock solid for sure. And he's smart. Like he knows which guys to surround himself with, you know, and those two assistants there at Edmonton were such a nice addition to what he brought to the table.
For sure. You probably answered this already, but do you still play hockey at all today?
Well, I try to. I tend to get busy. Like, there's a skate I missed today, and there's a really good skate here in Nashville. Like, you know, Ryan Smith lives here, and Mike Fisher, and Cody Hodgson runs it, and Hal Gill's here, and Marty Erat skates, and there's probably 10 or 12 ex-NHLers are here, and then we've got a whole bunch of guys that played in the KHL and different. So the skate's really good, which is good and bad, because I've gone like 4 months now and haven't skated, and it's like a once a week skate. So you go out and you're like the guy like sucking wind and getting all turned around. But it's definitely something I enjoy. I tell everybody this all the time. It's the one place where I'm doing a million things at once, but not thinking about anything. And that's for me, that exists there. And then I love to fly fish. So that's like on the river. So it's those two places where I kind of lose myself in what I'm doing.
Cool. I got to ask about Ryan Smith. He was one of my favorite players growing up. Like, is he a good dude? Is he as a player?
Smitty's a great guy. I mean, Smitty, the people that Ryan lets in, he really loves them. You know, I think being in the role that he had to play during his career, I think it makes it challenging, you know, to exist, especially like, say he was going to try to live in Edmonton. I mean, that'd be a tough deal, right, for him to stay there and go out and stuff like that. So I think down here, I talked to him, we meet for lunch every now and again, and I think it's been nice for him in a way to have a little bit of anonymity, and I think he gets that here, and I think he really appreciates it. Not to say he doesn't love Edmonton and everything that is about Edmonton or anything else, but I think he likes to fly under the radar a little bit and just kind of do his own thing now.
Well, I could appreciate that. He's an Edmonton icon, right? Like, the people in Edmonton love him. And that cup run in 06, that really solidified it for a lot of Oilers fans. Like, he was some of the things he pulled. He took that puck in the teeth and came back and scored in overtime.
He's one of the toughest sons of bitches I ever played with. I mean, he's unbelievable. And just, you talk about a guy that just knows how to get it done. I mean, you look at his stick, you look at his, like, everything about it, you're like, there's no way this guy can do the things that he can do.
No.
You know, I tried to shoot with his stick a couple of times. You can't even raise it off the ice, and he just pounds it like wherever he wants to. It's stiff as can be. It's like super short. It's heavy as all get up. I mean, but Smitty, he just knows how to do his deal. And he's the kind of guy that, like, game in, game out, you know exactly what you're going to get from him. He's smart, and he understands his position well, his role well, what makes him successful. And he branded that, you know, and it made him very, very, very valuable.
For sure. You know, we've been talking a lot of different stuff with hockey, obviously. One question, like, do you have a funny hockey story, something you could tell us that give us a couple, I guess, if there's something that comes out to mind. Like, is there any funny stories you can share with our listeners, hockey related?
Oh man, there's so many, but it's like, I don't know. It's hard to pull. You'd have to do some more work to extract these. I mean, this is an old brain that's been hammered a bunch of times. So you got to definitely lead me to water here. Because it's just like, there's so many. I mean, there's literally so many. I just have trouble with the recall on it, if you don't mind.
Okay, fair enough. We'll come back to that one. There's got to be some stories there somewhere. You know, we didn't really touch on Verbero yet. So maybe let's talk about Verbero hockey here. So, where did that idea come from? Like, are you the founder and CEO? Is that correct?
I'm the CEO and owner. Verbero has been around for a little over a decade. Actually, they had NHL presence for three seasons with players like Cam Atkinson and Nick Ritchie, and definitely paid into that marketing. That's not the direction that I wanted to go. So, you know, I bought the brand in December of 2019. And then lo and behold, obviously COVID hit shortly thereafter. I was working as president of a multi-brand hockey company. And while I was there, I was investing in some portions of that business to include acquisitions. I was part of the acquisition of a brand called First Star, which was formerly a Canadian apparel company out of Vancouver. And we brought that business in-house, and I was a partner on that. And then while I was there, the acquisition of Verbero occurred as well. Everything kind of, you know, the world went crazy, you know, in early 2020. And I basically put everything to call. I took some investments off the table from the business and left some on the table. And then in exchange, I took the Verbero brand, always with the intention to run it as a standalone. So one of the first things that we did was my best friend's an elite level software programmer. I wanted to be the only hockey company, the only equipment company manufacturer to have its own 24/7, 365 online team stores. So we created a support system, software system to basically account for that. We acquired a manufacturing facility in Pakistan that does all of our custom apparel, game wear, custom gloves, custom bags, because I wanted to have full control. I didn't want any layers between me and the end customer. So we sell player direct pricing to everybody. We're not trying to sell through retail because we really want to make sure we have the best products at the best possible prices. And to that account, like on the product side, you know, we have the lightest stick on the market at 350 grams. We have the only full carbon fiber skate. We have the only 3D printed full custom helmet in the game, the only, you know, full custom goalie program. I mean, on and on down the line. And then really everything pushing back to the team stores. The next thing that I did was, you know, really look at the current model of sales in hockey, say, and you look at, you know, the other brands and how they do things. Well, we tripled the industry standard commission rate, and we tie our reps to the accounts perpetually, and we allow our reps to build their own sub rep forces. So essentially, our reps can work with their best friends and colleagues and grow their own rep force while also focusing on, you know, going directly to teams, leagues, associations, and individuals. So it's really become kind of like a social network of hockey. You know, to put it in perspective, I think Bauer had 50 sales reps worldwide pre-COVID. We just eclipsed the 350 sales rep mark. So we're growing really fast. The team stores are resonating with people to a really high degree, and we're onboarding a lot of teams, leagues, and associations, which has really been an incredible byproduct of COVID. I mean, we've been able to grow significantly through COVID, and really thankful for the way that we've been able to put this structure together and the people that invest their time and their lives and their relationships to bring people into the Verbero family.
Yeah, for sure. What's the turnaround like for products? So usually if someone orders through a team store, you know, order to delivery, or is it a fairly quick turnaround?
We have the fastest turnarounds in the business because, as I mentioned, we own the manufacturing. So if you look at on the equipment side, if you get a stick and a pair of gloves, I mean, we have a fulfillment center just outside of Toronto, and we have one just outside of Hagerstown, Maryland for the U.S. So our fulfillment happens very quickly, and any of the equipment that you order, you're going to have in a matter of, you know, 1 to 3 days. On the custom side, you do custom apparel with us, custom game wear. So our apparel is turning in 2 to 3 weeks, all custom apparel. So it's, you know, your team logos on one side, Verbero's on the other, essentially every product turning in 2 to 3 weeks. Our sublimated stuff is turning in 3 to 5. Tackle twills turning in 4 to 6, and then custom gloves are 6 to 8, and bags are in the 4 to 6 week category as well. So we meet those deadlines. It's not like the other companies that say they're going to hit a deadline and then stuff comes like 10 weeks late. That's not our MO. And we are hammering the other companies on turn times just because of the level of control that we have.
Nice. That's awesome. Can you tell us a bit more about the your sales reps? Like, is there a high level of accountability with your sales reps? Are there regular meetings? Like, if someone's interested in becoming a rep, kind of what would you tell them?
Well, I, I'd say to email us at team@verbero.com, let us know you're interested. And then from there, I have sort of like a preset email that I send out that has a bunch of links to team stores, a couple different videos, and then it has actually recorded sessions of, we do sort of in-house team sessions that sort of go through a lot of the details of the business, and I record those and basically send those to people so that they can get a sense of the business from those meetings. And then there's a sales rep agreement attached if anyone, you know, needed to get on a call like this where we could chat through some logistics. I spend most of my days doing that. And then really from there, it's just a matter of signing the rep agreement. When the rep agreement comes in, we basically onboard the rep, and by onboard, we do a lot of things that other companies don't do too. Like we equip our reps with custom hot links and QR codes and hot links to team order forms and all kinds of stuff. And we do that because we want to automate it as much as we can. And then we also want to make sure that the sales reps are tied to those transactions. We also give access to a place where we basically store all kinds of support materials for sales. And then we have ongoing training sessions, and we have inside sales managers that essentially work with new reps to make sure the training's there. And then really more than anything, like it, our reps are from all categories. They're coaches, they're commissioners, they're players. We've got about 30 ex-NHL players, about 30 PHPA alumni, and about 20 of the top women in the game that are reps on our staff. And then we've got single moms, we've got, hockey dads. I mean, we across the board, and what I say to everybody is the truth of the matter. We all have relationships. We've all have time invested in the game. We all know somebody somewhere. Our reps, we certainly have ones that are full-time, and then we have people that add this into a full-time position because when they're not working, they're over in the arena doing X, Y, or Z. We partner with podcasts. We're partnered with Elite Prospects. I mean, our program is very broad and diverse as we discussed, and we're able to really complement any program with an additional revenue stream. And I think we've all seen through COVID, like, it's nice to have that additional revenue stream in your life, because who the heck knows what's going to happen with your job. And I think we all probably picked that up from coming through this the pandemic.
Yeah, and I think the pandemic's really driven people towards using technology further, right? And just like you said, those online team stores, I mean, that's a step in the right direction for sure. What would you say are your flagship products? Like, is it the skates being the lightest full or the full carbon skate, or is it the sticks? Like, what would you, in your mind, which one's your flagship product?
Well, I mean, the stick is 350 grams. It's the lightest stick on the market. Its durability is unmatched. Its price point puts us like 30 to 40% less than any of the other brands' top tier sticks. So in a lot of ways, like, that's really what I think defines Verbero. And then you look at our skate, I mean, really, you know, against other carbon fiber skates, we know who we're talking about. We're the only skate that's carbon fiber all the way up to the top of the tendon guard, all the way up to the eyelet facings. And it really is a full one-piece carbon fiber. It's all Japanese grade carbon fiber, airplane quality. And it's much lighter, much better looking. It's a very unique, we're in process on a redesign right now. That's going to be pretty avant-garde for sure. And then really our affiliation with Cav on the helmet side. I mean, this is a helmet that is full custom for each player, and it's obliterating the best in class from all the other brands from a protection standpoint. Like, it's completely unmatched. It's a really incredible thing for us to have. And for me, the thing I wanted Verbero to be known for, I didn't want any confusion, because the other brands, their model, we're going to flood the market with six or eight different skates that look identical at different price points. And the only reason they do that is because they want to keep the retailers under thumb. Because if you understand the nature of the business, the bigger brands allow the retailers to carry significant debt. Like, we're talking like $10, $20, $30 million in debt, all on the pretense that they keep buying the next generation or the next iteration of product, right? So it's like the mob. They've got them under thumb. It doesn't work. And then a lot of the, you know, if you really look at it, a lot of what goes into the pricing is paying ambassadors all these massive CEO bonuses. You're paying for all this product. It just the model doesn't work. So we wanted to be known as sort of really having a best in class for each category. And that's why until and unless I can find a better replacement for the stick or the skate or the helmet or our glove, that's the product that's going to be available. And we're going to focus on telling that story and focus on building relationships rather than trying to figure out how can we stuff a new glove down your throat? Well, we have an awesome glove. It's an amazing glove. It's the best glove for the price. So, you know, until I can find the reason to make it, you know, to bring in a new glove, thereby, you know, getting rid of the old glove, this is our model, and it applies all the way down to our apparel. Like, I want to have the hoodie that you want to wear, you know, when you're sitting around the house or going out on the town or whatever it is. Like, I want to make sure that our products are simple, but they're also high end, and it's the kind of stuff that you're proud to wear.
Cool. I like it a lot. Could you tell us, current NHL players testing your products right now, or you know, are they using it? Are there regulars that are using it in the NHL, or you know, tell us a bit about that.
Well, we're not trying to go through the NHL either. I mean, that's the other thing, that's the other model that doesn't work, and people don't really understand the cost of doing that, right? So it's like $100,000 or $150,000 per product category, right? So if I say I wanted to put our stick in the NHL, I got to put up 150 grand there. I've got to pay sales reps. I got to put product up. I got to do giveaways. By the time it's all said and done, you got to sell a hell of a lot of sticks to cover that cost, right? So we're focused more on, like, you know, communicating directly with the customer base, because in the end, like, yeah, sure, you can go buy that super expensive stick from one of our competitors. You're not getting a better stick, I guarantee you that, and you're certainly paying more. So, like, there's an education there, which is why it's, you know, so great to connect with guys like you guys to be able to help to tell that story, because, you know, our stuff is second to none in my mind, and especially for the price.
Yeah, you know, our buddy Tyler, actually, he's going to jump on the podcast with us on Sunday, it sounds like. But he was just telling me before we jumped on here, he was looking at Verbero for skates and gloves and sticks himself. He said it's a great product. He said that's awesome. He got Andy on to talk about it because it's good stuff. So,
yeah, I appreciate that. You know, and we have done a lot of testing, really, to your question. You know, like, you know, whether it's Glenn Metropolitan or Mark Mowers or Andrew Alberts or Sean Hines, or, I mean, I send product to all those guys, you know, before they sign on. Jamal Mayers loves a stick. I mean, there's all kinds of guys that we have on our staff that have authenticated what it is I'm saying, you know. And it's you know, it's like every time somebody gets our stick, they say the same thing to me. They're like, Andy, what's the deal with this thing? Like, they can't believe, right? And it was the same when I got it. Like, it was so light. I thought to myself, there's no way this thing can be durable. So the first thing I did, I went out and I rented the ice, and I shot 350 consecutive one-timers with an 85 flex and couldn't break it. I was literally trying to snap it in half, and I couldn't break it in half. So the durability's there. You know, it has an internal rib throughout the shaft without adding weight, and it has just absolutely incredible balance. And then it's a solid blade, right? So we're not trying to punch holes in a stick to, like, make it lighter or anything like that. It's just a naturally light stick. The solid blade really gives it a lot of feel, but it's not, like, explosive like a Warrior. Like, anytime I ever used a Warrior stick, I always felt like the puck would just explode off the stick. Right. It's not like that either. It has great feel, but it also has, like, enough of a cushion so you can actually, you know, control a hard pass or whatever you need to do. So it's a really, really well-balanced product.
That's really interesting. A guy your size to be able to shoot that many pucks. An 85 flex, like, for someone your size, that's a lot of whip, right?
But, well, I used 125 when I played, you know, but I never routinely shot it, you know, 102 or 103 miles an hour. So I can still shoot it. And it just, you know, and I don't want to use a stick that stiff anymore because I play forward now, and I just like to flick them under the bar. But it's still nice to know that you can load it up and you can lean on this stick and you can rely on it, and it's not going to snap in half on you.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah. What else do we have for guys? I think you covered everything on the Verbero side. Is there anything else you want to mention about Verbero before we kind of move on?
I don't think so. I mean, we kind of touched briefly on the RepForce thing. I mean, it is a great opportunity for people, and I love to spread that message. I mean, we make it really easy, you know, and truthfully for us, like, I value the relationships that people have. So we've created an infrastructure here in the brand that basically supports that. Like, if you guys made this part of your deal and you reached out and it was an ongoing thing, and we do it with the Next Shift podcast, we do it with Hockey AI, a whole bunch of different podcasts basically have partnered with us, and then they use the pod to send the messaging and then bring in the accounts, build the sub reps. we make it really easy because when the accounts come in, we essentially do everything. We work with them from, you know, initial contact, mock-ups or designs, whatever they need, getting their order in, taking payments, working with the manufacturer, basically all the way through delivery and beyond. I mean, we essentially do everything. So our reps are valued for their relationships and then paid very well. You know, like we're, you know, like I said, we tripled the industry standard commission rate, and then we tie our reps to the affiliates to the accounts in perpetuity. So we make it a nice additional revenue stream for people and really, really sort of make things easy.
Okay, good to know. And I think what I'll do too is I'll make sure I include all the links for Verbero in the episode in the show notes. So if people want to find out more about the company, it's all going to be there, guys. So keep an eye out for that. And we won't keep it too much longer, Andy, but we just want to go through our rapid fire segment. We kind of do this with our guests. It's predictions for next season. So just to get your thoughts, we're not going to hold you to anything here, obviously. But
we'll see, guys. I don't know how up to date I am on all this shit, but we'll give it a go.
Okay, fair enough. So first up, who is your pick to win the Norris Trophy this year?
Oh, man. I got to go with my boy, Eric Carlson. I love him. He was my partner in Ottawa. I'd love to see him do it.
Man, he was incredible in Ottawa. He was so much fun.
Yeah, he really was. Yeah. He really was. I weighed him by 100 pounds too, and we were partners. He was 165 and I was 265, and he used to call me the old man. And I think at the time I was 35 years old.
Oh, yeah. I hope he can bounce back because he's been a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, he has.
Who's your pick to win the Vezina this year?
Oof. Man, I don't know. That's a tough one. We got to go with the guy in Tampa. I don't think there's any way to take it away from him right now. I just think they're too hot, and there hasn't been enough changes, I don't think, to slow that team down any.
Well, so this one I'm going to go off the board here, but do you think they've got a chance to three-peat here, Tampa?
I do. Yeah, because they've built a culture. They really have. You know, I talked to Stacey Roos the odd time, and Stacey and I play together in Mini, and I think he's the GM of the minor league team or somewhere. Maybe he's even the assistant GM now with Tampa. But he and I spoke, about the situation in the bubble. And he said the ownership group is unbelievable. They give basically carte blanche to do anything you need to do to make sure the players are thriving. And then really the management group, as we've seen, they built a culture there that you see this time and time again when there's like, I don't want to call it a dynasty because I think that's cheesy, but like once there's a culture built and it's harder for people to draw outside the lines, there's a conformity that you need to have, like to have continuity and sustainability to whatever the program is that you're running. And then on top of that, they've got speed, they've got skill, they've got, you know, everything else they need to have. And then they've got enough guys that are there that know how to get the job done. And you see that time and time again. Like you look at like the PGA Tour, these guys that get down to it in the hunt, and you can see the guys that haven't won, they almost find a way to lose. You know what right. I mean? Like you're yeah. watching, you're like, oh my goodness, I can't believe like that happened. And then it doesn't happen with the guys that win often because they figure out how to calm those nerves, you know, how to succeed in those types of situations. They've learned how to endure. I think the only thing that would come into question is whether or not they have the desire to want to do it, you know, because it is such a long road, you know, it's such a long road all the way to win it in the end. I mean, it certainly looks like they're having a good time doing it, but it's that's probably their only limiting factor.
Okay. Yeah. I think they've got the nastiness too that you need in the playoffs, right? Like they've got guys like Killorn and Maroon, and even Sergachev and Hedman can be nasty SOBs too, right?
Totally.
And McDonough for that matter. But
yeah.
Okay, so who would be your pick to win the Hart Trophy?
Oh man, it's tough not to look at McDavid, right? Every year, I mean, he's just so dynamic. I don't know if he's defendable. So if they're healthy and he's got a strong contingency around him, I mean, he's certainly got it with his line mate there. But you gotta go there, I think, for that one.
Yeah, can we just touch on McDavid a bit? Like, have you ever seen a player like him, like throughout your career or even years past? Can you think of a player that's been close?
I mean, sure. I mean, if you look at just purely offensively, I think, and you look at, you look at Ovechkin, I was fortunate enough to play with Ilya Kovalchuk, and, you look at really, there's not that many more. You know, there, you have Pavel Bure. I mean, there's players that are like once in a generation. You know, that come around that are just so special, and he's definitely one of those players
for sure. Rocket Richard Trophy.
I mean, you probably got to go with McDavid again. I mean, I don't know who's going to stop him. I mean, maybe MacKinnon, but I don't know. I think they've got a different approach there in Colorado. I think they've got a maybe a little bit more of a defensively minded structure that might not allow him to do as much. And also, I don't know that he makes the players around him always better. Like, I think like individualistically, he's maybe even as dynamic as McDavid, but I don't know that the sort of give take thing is there with him to where he can extract as many points. You know, because that's the thing too. Like, there's players that are great. Like Kovalchuk was a great player. He didn't always make people around him better because he was impossible to judge. You didn't know where he was going to go, what he's going to do. So sure, you'd get the odd assist, like chipping it up the boards because he's cheating on a breakaway, but he'd also pick up like four minuses because he's cheating outside the blue line type of thing. So like, yeah. You know, the greatness in a team environment is a special kind of greatness. And I think he's got that mark for sure.
Okay, cool. Pick to win the Selke Trophy.
What's the Selke Trophy again? What do you got to do to get that one?
Best defensive forward.
A defensive forward. Oh man, I don't know. I have absolutely no idea on that one.
Okay, we'll take a pass.
Yeah, take just a legit pass.
You
know what?
You can just default to Patrice Bergeron, and we'll all be happy.
I was just gonna say that.
I forgot he wins that every year, doesn't he? Yeah, I totally forgot about that.
This one might be tougher for you. Who's your pick to win the Calder Trophy? Rookie.
I couldn't even name one rookie.
Okay.
Is that bad?
We will insert Cole Caulfield there for you. Jack Adams Trophy, Coach of the Year.
That's Coach of the Year. I don't know. It's got to be some kind of underdog coach. I literally have no idea. It's hard to predict that because I don't even know who's even up and coming. I have no idea.
Yeah, that's funny because you're the second person now, I think, to say that. It's always a coach from a team that's kind of their up and coming or improving, yeah, or an underdog.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
Joel, you won't know until the end, so it's like it's completely unpredictable.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Pick for the President's Trophy.
Oh man, it's probably going to be Colorado again. I mean, I honestly think it's probably going to be Colorado, but they might have a chance to win it, but they'll do well in the regular season probably,
like they always do. Okay, so then Stanley Cup final matchup, Colorado and.
I mean, can they play Tampa in the final?
Sure, yeah.
God, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yep. Oh, yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah,
me too.
And then who's going to win the Stanley Cup this year?
I think it's going to be – I think it has a strong chance to be Colorado, but I think Tampa's going to three-peat.
Okay. All right, I guess we'll see. Yeah. And I don't know if you have a favorite team, but like – you know, do you have a favorite NHL team or is there a couple or do you just kind of cheer for players?
I just played for so many. So like, you know, I hate the Rangers cause I played for the Islanders. I hate the Leafs, even though I grew up watching them cause they're just a bunch of babies. I don't know. I honestly feel as much like an Oiler as anything else, maybe because that's where I ended. And I grew up a huge Gretzky fan, and I was born in 75. So, I mean, watching that team as a youngster was so formative for me. Yeah. And then I live in Nashville, so we definitely go and enjoy the odd Preds game.
Cool. Okay. Well, I think that's all I've got here, guys. John, Bruce, any other questions you want to ask Andy?
I got one question. Switching from teams, was there one guy maybe where you thought he was going to be a huge knob or something like that? You got to the team and you found out that just fantastic player or just an awesome person? Or
well, I'll say this, like most guys by the time you get to this level are checked out. Like most guys are somewhat in the same vein. And because I think one thing hockey does well is we kind of force out certain types of behaviors. Like, I think guys aren't able to get away with being selfish because you're going to get your head ripped off in practice. Like, that was always the way, right? You kind of self-regulate, self-police. But, you know, there are guys that maybe had reputations, you know, like I remember going into Anaheim and Bobby Ryan was there and I'd heard some stuff, you know, and I went like Bobby's like the best guy. I loved him. Like we had a great time together and just what, and then if you like take a minute to understand, like really try to understand people and why they might be dealing with what they might be dealing with. Like it's, and you know, as media always typecasts guys too and kind of perpetuates stuff that probably isn't even really an issue. So I think there's some of that that goes on too.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, for sure.
Bruce, anything else?
Yeah, I got one question too. So you mentioned earlier that it cost quite a bit of money to get into the NHL. Have you had any players, I guess, currently playing that have come to you and requested to use your product?
Well, not players that are playing currently, like just because we're not in that world, and I don't spend any time on it because I think it's a road to ruin as a brand. Like it's not the way to grow your brand anymore. I mean, I think that the stranglehold that the other brands put on, they fight hard to keep, and they pay a lot into that.
Okay.
And the only reason that they can do that is because they're a publicly traded company, and they can basically throw all kinds of money to do that. People need to understand, like, when you buy those products, you're also paying into that. So, I mean, if you're comfortable with that, then you're loyal in that regard. That's great. But you shouldn't be afraid to look at alternatives, because I say this to people. This is a story all the time, right? So the difference between a $1,200 retail skate and a $200 retail skate is about $50 at manufacturing level. So why should the end customer have to pay $1,000 for something that costs the manufacturer $50? And then you just got to be okay with that, you know, that you're paying into that, because it really shouldn't cost that much. Like the most expensive skate on the market is going to cost $150 at manufacturing level maximum. So you just got to look at what you're paying into, you know. It's like, and there is, it's time for a change, you know. It's never more clear than sort of the Amazon uprising and how people are comfortable buying OEM products or buying knockoff products or whatever it is. Like, I think people expect good quality, and good quality is sort of the standard for everything now. Like, I don't think it's that hard to make good quality products. And I think in the end, like, when you have good branding and thoughtful pricing, like you can really establish a strong rapport with your customer base. And I think that's what we've done here at Verbero.
Does the, do the other vendors make it tough? So if an NHL player, current one, did reach out to you and wanted to use your stuff on ice, does all the other agreements and contracts, does that make it tough for you to get your stuff there if they wanted to use it?
No, but again, like, so it's somebody reached, they love the stick, you know, and they reach out to me and they want to use the stick. Well, now I got to go pay $150,000 for the stick. Okay, so I got to probably pay this guy some kind of endorsement deal, you know, and then maybe I sell some sticks. Maybe somebody likes some sticks, but like, you think about your net profit on stick sales. I mean, you probably got to sell $1 million worth of sticks just to cover like one player endorsed. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, it's obscene, and it's not the way to grow a new brand. Like, people still try it. You see, like, STX comes in, or Combat, or whoever it is. Mm-hmm. They come in and they dip their toes in the water, and it doesn't work every single time. Well, there's a reason for that. I mean, because it just doesn't work. Yeah, I mean, it just flat out doesn't work. You know, and like, True Temper can get away with it because they're a golf shaft company. They're not even a freaking hockey company. Like, you know, and they've got this skate that's a custom skate, and it's a good skate. Don't get me wrong, but like, it's $1,200, right? It's unapproachable. You know, now they're making a stick. They got some gloves. They got a few other things, and then they get some good players because they can basically take that golf money and they can throw it at hockey players. I mean, if they're a hockey company, just a hockey company flat out, I mean, they're not able to even do what they're doing now, even just to add another brand into the mix, you know. Warriors not doing well, you know. I'm sure Bauer is going to file bankruptcy again for the fourth time in the last, you know, 10 years or whatever. I mean, it's just the writing's on the wall that these models don't work. And then you look at retail. Retail's dying too. I mean, you think about coming out of COVID now, right? And you think about basically 3 years of usually these bigger brands are a couple or 3 years ahead on product development. Well, how can you do product development? There's no retailers selling any products. They don't have room for any products. A lot of them have closed their doors, and when they come back, they're going to be selling products from 2, 3, 4 years ago, right? And then now, about, you know, think about these bigger brands. their whole model is built on continuously stuffing product down the retailer's throats. Well, if they can't take it, where's it going? Where's the products going? They laid off, 75% of their executive staff. You think they're bringing those people back? I mean, probably not. So the whole landscape is changing. And this is why, I'm ever more assured that we have the right model, working player direct.
Oh, that's good. Cause I wasn't sure how that worked. If a player could just come and request one and use it how that all worked, but
yeah, you gotta pay into that program. It's all pay to play, all up front too.
It's not surprising at all.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, guys, if you don't have anything else, we'll maybe let Andy move on to this day here. But Andy, thank you so much. We really appreciate this. It means a lot to us to have you on. Where can people find you? Verbero.com, is that correct?
Yeah, anyone who wants to look us up, you can just look us up at verbero.com. Any questions you might have, or if you want to join the sales force, you can reach out to team@verbero.com. And then if you want to check out a team store, what it looks like, you can just go verbero.com/St. Louis AAA. So just AAA Blues, St. Louis AAA Blues, and you'll be able to see a store. The another one you can check out is verbero.com/elite prospects. That's almost easier to remember. So you can check out what our team store looks like. And if anybody has any interest in pursuing a team store, you can send that info as well to team@verbero.com.
Okay. I'll make sure to include those links in the show notes along with your social media links, and you guys can reach them there and check out some of their stuff. Yeah, with that, Andy, thank you very much. We will let you get on with your day.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for your time as well.
Thank you very much.
Awesome. Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Okay. Wow. That was good stuff from Andy. Andy, again, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Lots of good stuff there. You definitely gave us a couple sound bites or quotes we can use that people are probably gonna have a good chuckle at. So thanks again. And guys, like I said, all the notes or the links are going to be in the show notes. So be sure to go check out Verbero Hockey. Lots of good stuff there. So with that, we're going to move on to our 2021 Pacific Division Fantasy Hockey Preview, starting with the Anaheim Ducks. And I guess we've got some information here that we're going to include with each team. So there's kind of a team analytics snapshots. We've got their record last year was 17-30-9. Goals for per game, 2.21. Goals against, 3.16. Goals for percentage, 41.2, which was 30th in the league. Corsi 4, 48.43, which was 19th. And then their special teams are just hot garbage. Their power play percentage was 8.9%, which was dead last in the league. And their PK was 79.9, which was 16th. So, guys, for as much as we've talked about Trevor Zegras and Jamie Drysdale and Ricard Raquel, Ryan Getzlaff's even still there, I don't think we can realistically rely on these guys for a ton of power play production next year. I mean, Zegras and Drysdale are for sure going to help it, but I'm not saying these guys are on my do not draft list, but I'm definitely fading them myself. The other thing I'll mention here too quickly is they have 14 back-to-back sets this season, and 54% of their games are played on off nights, so Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays. So there's an opportunity there if you're kind of looking at schedule. You might want to pick up a couple Ducks just for scheduling purposes, so you're not, sitting guys on your bench because your roster's full every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So, but with that, top fantasy targets. Trevor Zegras, right now he's going at 176.2, so fairly late in the 12-team Yahoo draft. 23% drafted, so a lot of guys aren't even touching him that late. Our prediction here, 25 goals and 55 points. Do you guys like the over or under on that?
I think I'm going to go slightly under on that. He doesn't have much of a complimentary cast there. Like, as you go down the list, Raquel is basically undrafted.
Yep.
Getzlaff's fantasy usefulness is dropping annually, so it's...
Yeah.
There's... I think Silverberg is still there. They've got some other young people like Troy Terry, Sam Steele, and that, but I'm just...
Max Comtois.
I think Zegras is going to pass them very quickly. So I think 55 points is achievable for him, but I think it's going to take something special for him to get past that.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'll take the under. John, what do you think about Zegras for this year?
Taking the under on this as well. I know he's got filthy hands and everything else, but yeah, just for this year, I'm going to take the under on that. Just until he... until he progresses throughout his career there, he'll definitely be a fantastic player. But yeah, for now, I'm taking the under.
Well, and if we're talking keeper leagues, I mean, Zegras and Raquel, or Zegras and Drysdale are both guys you want to consider, right? They still have lot of value in keeper leagues.
If you're looking in, yeah, if you're keeping full teams and stuff, yeah, they're two you want to look at for sure.
Or dynasty leagues, yeah.
Yeah, that was the one I was thinking about.
Yeah. Jamie Drysdale, we've talked about him in the past. We've got him pegged for 10 goals and 30 points. Do you guys like the over under?
If he gets first power play time, I'll take the over on it.
And if the power play can score.
And if the power, well, I'm hoping that he'll have a lot to do with that. So, yeah. Between him and Zegras, right? So, they're going to be the two that are going to drag this team into respectability. So,
yeah, and he's going late enough too, right? He's at 162.6 in Yahoo, so he's probably a late round gamble that you can take a look at.
Yeah, so if he's like your last or second last defenseman you're going to pick in your draft, I think that's perfectly fine to pick him there. So,
yep. Okay, John, anything else there, Dad?
No, nothing really to add. I agree. I think he's, if he gets that PP one time, he's going to be fantastic on there. Great player, and yeah, he'll put the puck in the net for sure.
And then last year, just quickly, John Gibson. Excuse me. He's going on an average 173.2, 43% drafted. So he's actually still being, about 50, close to 50% drafted in Yahoo leagues. And oddly enough, his ADP is up from last year. He was going on average at 186.6 last year. So I'm not sure if the sentiment is just that with Zegras and Drysdale and Comtois and Steele and some of these guys that the Ducks are somehow going to be that much better in the Pacific, but people are still drafting John Gibson. So
it could be the off nights thing too on the schedule, right? So,
yep.
Because most likely he's going to be drafted. He's going to be your third goalie, right? So if he's playing off nights, so if you need a goalie start or you need to fill a goalie in, he'll do a good job of that for you this season.
Well, and I think too, if you're someone who's subscribing to the zero G draft strategy, like he's a good candidate for a late round pick, especially definitely, like you said, as your third goalie. So the over under here, we've got set at 23 wins and 3 shutouts. Do you guys like the over or under?
You know what? I'm going to go over on this one.
Okay.
He's going over
the talent,
well.
So.
Yep.
Okay. Make it 3 times. We'll all go over on this one. And then we'll move on to probably my least favorite team in this division, the Calgary Flames. 26, 27, and 3 record last year, 2.77 goals for per game, 2.86 goals against. Goals for percentage, 49.21, which was 18th. Corsi for 52.43, which was 7th. And their power play, well, the special teams weren't great either, 18.3%, which was 21st. And their PK was 80.2, which was 15th in the league. Schedule-wise, they've got 14 back-to-back sets this season, and just 28% of their games are played on off nights. So, top fantasy targets. Just for the record, we'll get to our predictions, I guess, a little bit later here for the division, but I just don't see Calgary being a real impactful team in this division myself. I know they're going to play more defensively, but I don't have a lot of faith in these guys after last year. And it's probably because I'm just sour after drafting Matthew Tkachuk last year. But he's our first target here, so we'll talk about him really quick. Sorry, Bruce, you had a point there?
I can see it all depends on how these guys are going to adjust to Sutter's system. It's like you look at what happened when he played, when he went down and coached in LA, right? So they adjusted to a system and they got a couple of Stanley Cups out of it, right? So it depends on how this group is going to mold to that system. So yeah, they're not going to blow the doors off in fantasy for anybody because the structure just won't allow it. But like you look at some of the guys they added, so you go through the list, right? So they added Coleman. Markstrom needs to bounce back for them to have any chance whatsoever.
I think he will. Actually, that was one guy I was going to talk about is Markstrom, because playing under Daryl Sutter's system, they got to be more defensive, right? I know they've lost Mark Giordano, but they're just the defensive structure of that team is going to be such that he should bounce back next year.
I think so.
So, we've got him set at 30 wins, 3 shutouts. Do you guys like the over-under there?
I think so. I think it's bang on.
30 wins, 3 shutouts. Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about before, I try to make these things as close to what would be reality, right? So,
yeah. Super annoying.
I know, John, you love it.
I like easy answers.
Okay. Anyway, Matthew Tkachuk. So 32 goals, 73 points. That's the over-under you guys like. What do you think there?
I'm going to go under.
Okay. Yeah, I thought it was a little bit high based on what he did last year, but his ADP this year, 36.7. He's 100% drafted. Again, it's up from last. I don't fully understand this. Like, this is early Yahoo, so take it all with a grain of salt. But last year, he was going on average 58.4. Now he's going 36.7. So,
well, part of it's category coverage, right? So he covers a lot of categories.
He does.
And two, seeing that his brother Brady went like almost in the first round in some of the Yahoo drafts, he could be, Brady could be pulling him up too, thinking, well, if I can't get Brady in the first round, I'm going to get Matthew before everyone else grabs him. So there could be a lot of reaching in there that could be bringing his ADP up too.
Yeah, I'd say there's some truth to that for sure.
But if he can return to his rookie season form, like it's all good for Calgary, right?
Yeah, I think 70 points is kind of his range somewhere in there. I don't think that's going to be a real stretch for Matthew Tkachuk. It's just a matter of, you know, does he stay healthy and how does the team do this year? So,
yeah.
I should mention too, he has left wing, right wing eligibility. As does our next player here, Johnny Gaudreau, has left wing, right wing eligibility. He's going on average 51.3, 100% drafted. Last year, he's going at 65.3. We've got him here at 28 goals, 70 points. Do you guys like the over-under?
For Gaudreau, I think I'm going to go under. I don't know how well he's going to do in Sutter's defensive system. I really don't.
Yeah.
I think he's going to struggle in it.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Bruce. I can't see him getting over 70, so yeah, I'm taking the under.
I won't be drafting him just because most of the leagues we play in, they're banger leagues, right? So Gaudreau doesn't provide a lot of category coverage, and if he's not scoring goals or putting up assists, he's really not that helpful in fantasy, right? So, okay. Elias Lindholm, center right wing eligibility, going on average at 83.1. Last year, he was going at 92, so he hasn't moved much. 31 goals, 70 points. Do you guys like the over-under?
I'm going to take the over on Lindholm. He's been steadily improving every year since he's been in Calgary, so I'm going to take the over on this one. I think he'll adapt well, and he'll put up the points.
Okay, John?
I'm going to take the under just because I don't have a whole lot of faith in Calgary at all, so... that's going to be my vibe for this one.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to stray far from that number. I'll take the over just because I think he'll be around there, and he is kind of their number one center, and he's going to get used that way, and he's probably going to be given a ton of time, right? Yeah. Like, so yeah, I'll take the over on that one. And two, in the like at 83 overall, you're not spending a top 3, 4, 5 round pick on him, right? So. This guy burned me last year too, Sean Monahan, center only eligibility. He's actually going 186.7, 32% drafted. Last year, he was going at 164.9. 22 goals, 52 points. Do you guys like the over or under?
I'm going to go under. Unless he has a complete bounce back, I don't see him. He's trending in the wrong direction. I think it's going to continue to go that way for him.
Yeah, I was just taking a look here at his stats. Like, so his shots on goal per game has actually gone down the past three seasons. In 17-18, he was at 2.7 shots on goal per game. The next season, 2.7, then down to 2.4, then down to 2 last year. And his shooting percentage has gone down in each of the past three seasons too. So,
and he was injured for most of last season too, or he played injured most of last season, did he not?
I think he played injured and we just weren't made aware of it, obviously. He played 50 games last year. So he played almost the whole season. He just, wasn't. And so maybe that's a case too, Bruce, of a guy that just needed some time to recover, and maybe he'll come back and he'll be fine. But I mean, points per game, shots on goal, shooting percentage, all that stuff is on a downward progression. And so it doesn't look good.
Yeah. I'd be very happy to be wrong on him, but I just, unless he's totally healthy and he can get back to the way he was, but until we can see it, I'm not reaching for him.
No, I'm not either.
I'm going to take the over on him just barely though.
Okay.
Like 55.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take the over two. Like it's just right in that range, but he's going to be fighting for it if he's not healthy. So, their free agent acquisition, Blake Coleman, right wing eligibility right now, he's going at 174.5, 7% drafted. Last year, he was going 176. 23 goals, 42 points. Do you guys like the over or under?
I'm going to go under on Coleman. It's his first year in Sutter's system, so it's very different than what he was looking at in Tampa. So, and he's going to be utilized different. He's not going to be playing a fourth line role in Calgary. He's going to be playing higher up. So I'm going to take the under for this season on him, and we'll see how well he adapts to Sutter's system.
Okay. John?
I'm going to take the under too. No real good reason why. Just that's my just hunch. Cause. That's my hunch. Yep.
I'm taking the over because I think he's a Sutter kind of player. Like he likes to hit. He forechecks hard. He's a fast skater. And I think he's got a role somewhere in the top six, and he's going to be given opportunities. So I think 23 goals and 42 points is definitely achievable. And at that price point too, like, you know, in the last or second last pick of your draft, I wouldn't be afraid to take him.
Did he play top six in Jersey before he got traded?
That's a good, well, because he went Jersey, then Tampa. Tampa, he's playing on that third line with Gord, I think, wasn't he?
Well, third or fourth, wasn't it?
I think he was kind of, he was part of that third line that almost played like second line minutes in Tampa, right? So
yeah.
I don't know what he was doing in New Jersey, to be honest, but my guess is he's going to play in the top six in Calgary. They just don't have enough depth there for him to play further down the lineup, right?
That's true. That is very true.
This one's kind of, I wasn't sure. Like, do you guys think, is it going to be Noah Hanifin or is it going to be Rasmus Anderson manning the top power play unit for Calgary? Because last year we saw Anderson take over that time from Mark Giordano. I'm just not sure that, you know, is it going to be Anderson again this year or is it going to be Hanifin? What do you guys think?
Well, if he gets the time, he'll go over the goals and points total if he gets the time, the full power play one time.
Yeah, we've got 6 goals and 33 points. I'm not sure if he's going to get that power play usage. So
no,
we'll find out, I guess, at the end of training camp here, right? So close to camp to get the reports to see where he's at. But
yeah,
if he ends up getting the time, he'll go over that. But if it's Hanifin, then yeah, that's probably close to bang on.
Personally, I'm just going to fade Calgary defense this year, but I had to put a D in, right? So here we are. okay, we covered Markstrom already. Let's move on to our favorite team in this division.
I was going to say, you're going to fade this one too then, or?
I will not be fading the Edmonton Oilers at all. Okay, so yeah, 35, 19, and 2 record last season. Goals for 3.27, goals against 2.75. Goals for percentage 54.3, which was 10th. Corsi 4, 49.13, which is 16th. And then their power play was first at 27.6%, and their PK was 9th at 84%. So the Oilers only have 9 back-to-back sets this season, and 46% of their games are played on off nights. So if this is where like a lot of people, he's a boom or bust pick, but I would give some serious consideration to Mike Smith next season because there's not a ton of back-to-backs. Yeah, John's giving me that look. Did you just fart? no, but okay, honestly, there's not going to be a lot of back-to-backs here. So he's going to start a lot of games. We know that. Like, Tippett likes him. He's going to play a lot of games. And they're playing 46% of the games on off nights. So just for that schedule, too, where now you can fit him, even if he's your second or third goalie, now you can squeeze him into those off-night games more often than not, right?
I wouldn't have any trouble drafting Smith.
The biggest
question with him is going to be health, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of what he did last year, even the year before, I don't have any trouble drafting him as a second or third goaltender.
And he's going right now at 125.1 and 81% drafted. So keep that. I mean, that might be a little high for me. I'd like to see him go a little bit later, maybe outside the top 150 if I can. I've got the over-under here set at 33 wins and 3 shutouts. Do you guys like the over-under?
Well, I'm hoping for the over because I'm an Oilers fan, so I'm hoping for the over, but it'll depend on health. But yeah, it's...
Okay. John?
I'm hoping for a new goalie, but I'll take the over on this one.
Okay, well, I'm going to take the over,
too. I'll still take the over. Yep.
Okay, so let's talk about the obvious ones here first. Connor McDavid, center eligibility. His ADP is 1.1, 100% drafted, obviously. His 2020 ADP was 2.1. I've got the over under here set at 46 goals and 139 points. Do you guys like the over or under?
Over. I think he'll be close to averaging 2 points a game.
Okay. Yeah, I
think he'll push. He'll be making a push for 165, 170 points by the end of the season.
Oh, boy. I hope so.
Well, divisional games, the division's not strong.
No, it's not.
You've got some goaltenders there that don't have a lot of experience, right? So, and Markstrom is coming off a bad year. Demko, like you got Peterson. Yeah, you got Gibson, right? But
there's some decent goalies in the division. But
I think he can do it. He's got the talent, and he's going to have the line mate. So I think he can do it.
Oh, I'm not going to bet against McDavid. I wanted to set something that was, I guess, what I thought was realistic. But yeah, like I think I wouldn't for a second be surprised if he hit 160 or 170. Yeah.
Is it a realistic goal? Absolutely. I just think he's going to go way over it.
Okay. John, what do you think?
If he doesn't get injured, yeah, I think he'll go over
You knock on wood right now. You knock on wood right now. Cut that nonsense there. Out.
Yep.
We'll talk about that stuff in the podcast.
I'm really hoping that that he stays away from the injury bug, and yeah.
Okay.
We're going over.
Okay. Next up, Leon Draisaitl. He's got center left wing eligibility, which I quite like. ADP this year, 2.4, 100% drafted. His 2020 ADP was 3.2. Points predictions here, 49 goals, 122 points. Do you guys like the over or under?
I like the point total, but he'll go over 50. He'll go over 50 goals.
See, and I struggle with that. I wasn't sure if he was going to hit 50 or not. I think he's going to be close. He'll be right around 50 goals.
He'll be over.
Okay. John's giving the thumbs down, so he's taking the under on Draisaitl. How dare
I am taking the under on Draisaitl. I am still not on the Draisaitl hype train.
The Deutschland Dangler is going to go over, guaranteed.
No, I'm saying 110 and 45 goals.
Okay, we'll just agree to disagree, John. It's fine. We can still be friends. I just don't agree with you.
Fair enough.
Okay, but hey, let's talk about your favorite player, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
Oh,
center left wing eligibility. Center left wing eligibility. ADP 76.7, 100% drafted. He's actually, he had a down year last year, so he's going a little bit later. His ADP last year was 61.2. Points prediction, 27 goals, 65 points. Do you like the over or under, John?
Man, I really want to say the over. I really do, but I think I'm going to take the under on it even.
Okay, interesting.
Just depending on who his line mates are going to be.
Well, let's assume for a second that he's going to play mostly with Draisaitl and Yamamoto.
Under.
Okay. Bruce?
I'm going to go over. It won't be too much over. I don't think he'll hit 70 points, but it'll be more than 65.
Yeah, I'd love to see him hit 70 points this year, but not sure it's going to happen. Yeah, I'll take the over. I think he'll be close, like you said. Next up, Zach Hyman, left wing, right wing eligibility, 129.4 ADP, 99% drafted. Last year, people are grabbing Hyman, they're reaching for him. Last year, he was going at 171.4. And I find that interesting because he was playing with Matthews last year. It's not like it's it is a massive downgrade, but it's not a massive downgrade, realistically. So, points prediction here, 30 goals, 65 points. You guys like the over-under? Assuming he stays with McDavid for the majority of the season.
Over.
Yeah, I'm taking the over.
Okay, three times.
Whether he plays on Draisaitl's wing or McDavid's wing, he's going to score points.
Yeah, and just the nature of the game he plays, like he's going to be, he'll be right in there. He'll be involved in a lot of the plays, yeah. Right? And I'm expecting he's going to be on the first unit power play too. I think he'll get that net front spot. So. Definitely. Okay, let's talk defense here. Tyson Barrie, 63.9 ADP. 100% drafted. Last year, he was going at 124.6. So things change over the course of a year, especially when you're the NHL's leading goal scorer by defenseman. Over under 14 goals and 64 points. What do you guys think?
I think that's pretty much bang on. He'll be in the top five of defensive scoring at the end of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take the over.
Yep, me too. Taking the over.
Okay. Bruce?
Yeah, I'll go over.
Okay. Darnell Nurse. 68.5 ADP, 100% drafted. Last year he went at 106.5 on average. Points prediction, 14 goals, 51 points. I'm torn with Nurse. He's been going, like him and Barry kind of going in the same spot, but it seems like he's going so early. Like I know he's got value for categories coverage and he hits, he blocks, like it just seems early. I don't know if I'll be reaching for him like in the fifth round.
Well, he'll be the only Oiler defenseman left in the fifth round. Tyler's going to take Barry in the second round, so.
Oh, I can't wait for him to come on Sunday and just like try to defend himself.
I'll probably get punted out of the league for that.
Okay. So I'm going to take the over. I think that's right where he's going to be. He'll be 14 to 16 goals and 50 points is kind of what I think for Nurse next year.
Yep. I agree.
I'm on the over.
Okay. And then we covered Mike Smith already, which brings us to the Los Angeles Kings. Their record last year was 21-28-7. Goals for 2.54. Goals against 3.02. Goals for percentage was 45.6, which put them 22nd in the league. Corsi for was 47.7, which is 25th. So those numbers don't look good there. Special teams, the power play wasn't great. They were 18.9%, which was 19th, and their PK was 83.7, which put them at 7th. You know what? This is an improved team, I think. Like, I've got them making some real strides this year in that Pacific Division. I like Arvidsson. I like Deneau. I think bringing in Edler is a, you know, as a veteran defenseman, I think he's going to fill a role there. I think Dowdy will play well again. We've talked about Kopitar, right? We think with Deneau being there, that's going to take off some of the defensive load for him, and he'll play better. So, and then they've still got some youngsters too, right? They've got Quentin Byfield there and Gabe Vilardi. Like, they've got some guys that could come in and, yeah, you know, make somewhat of an impact. So they've got 16 back-to-back sets this season, and they play 40% of their games on off nights. So let's talk about Anze Kopitar here quickly. I've got the over-under here at 24 goals and 74 points. He's going on average at 95.7 right now. He went pretty much in the same spot last year at 100 overall. So what do you guys think? Over-under.
Over. I think having Deneau in there is going to take this, a lot of the defensive responsibilities off of him. So I think he's going to go over. He's going to have a real good season.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that.
100% I agree with that. I'm definitely taking the over on that one.
And actually, the value's been pretty good because he's been going like at 95, it's still pretty good value. And in some mock drafts I've done, he's gone significantly later. So. Victor Arvidsson, right wing eligibility. He's going on average at 175.9, 85% drafted. So people are reaching for him, but obviously just really late. He is going quite a bit higher than last year. He was at 193 last year. So I've got the over under here at 29 goals and 59 points. Do you guys like the over or the under?
I like the over for Arvidsson. I think he's going to have a real, he's going to stay healthy and he's going to bounce. Yeah. He's going to bounce back. He's going to have a real good season in LA.
Yeah, I like Arvidsson. I'm just going to pull up his numbers here. I can't. Yeah, he shot at 3.0 shots on goal per game last season, which, you know, he bounced back from the year prior where he's at 2.2. You know, the years before that was 3.4, 3.2, 3.1. So, like, the shot volume, I think, is going to be there, especially if he's playing next to Kopitar, who's a great playmaker. So I think he's going to be around 3 shots a game. His career average is 11.4% shooting percentage. So last year he was down too. He was only at 6.6% last year. So I think if he can stay consistent with his shot volume and if the shooting percentage regresses positively, he's going to easily be in that 25 to 30 goal range or 30 to 35 goals possibly, right? But
yeah.
I really like him for next year, especially where he's going. I'll take the over on 29 goals and 59 points. John, you're nodding in approval.
Yes, I am nodding in approval. I agree. He's going to go over.
Okay. Drew Doughty, ADP 102.4, 100% drafted. 2020 ADP of 128.6. 9 goals, 49 points. Do you guys like the over or the under?
I'm going over with Drew too. I'm a big Drew Doughty fan, so I think he's going to do over. I think he's going to be, now that he's got a little more talent there now to work with, and
yeah,
he always plays with fire, right? But I think he's going to find a different level this year, and he's going to come back and he's going to put more than 50 points on the board.
Yeah, I like Doughty, and one thing I like about him is he just gets volume. Like, he plays a ton of ice time. Last year, he played over 26 minutes a game. He's always he's in the first unit power play. Like, he's got a very good fantasy floor, mm-hmm. and given where he's being drafted again, it's not outrageous at 102.4. So,
no,
yeah, I can easily see him outpacing 49 points. So I'll take the over.
Unlike you guys, I'm not a big Doughty fan, and I'm actually going to take the under on this one.
Okay, good. I like some difference of opinion here.
I don't know. I just think he's getting up there, and I think he's going to see some drop off, and I think that this is the year for it.
Okay. Time will tell. We'll have to play some sort of a side bet for next season.
Ooh.
Yeah. We'll come up with something and talk about it later. And then Calvin Peterson here. So ADP 172.5. He's 76% drafted. And his 2020 ADP was 192.4. So people are taking notice. They're a little bit more optimistic on him for next season. I think he's going to be the steal of the draft. Yep. At goaltending anyway. I think he's a guy that a lot of people are sort of missing the boat on. The over-under I've got set at 28 wins and 3 shutouts. And that actually is different from what I had previously in our goalie preview. But just after talking to Nate and looking at his numbers again here, I think 28 wins and 3 shutouts is probably realistic. So I'm going to take the over. But what do you guys think, John?
I really don't know where I want to go with that one. But yeah, I think I'm going to take the over on that one too.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah, Bruce? No, I'll take the over.
Okay.
I'm already on record saying over, so I'm sticking with it. I'm going with the over.
Okay, beautiful. The San Jose Sharks. So the record last year, 21-28-7. Goals for, 2.61. Goals against, 3.50. Goals for percentage is 42.69, which was 27th in the league. Corsi for was 48.02, which was 24th. So advanced numbers or analytics don't look great. Special teams, their power play was not good at 14.1%, which was 29th in the league, and their PK was 14th at 80.4%. They've got 12 back-to-back sets this season, and just 27% of their games are played on off nights. So for, you know, a number of reasons, I'm just going to fade the Sharks goaltending. First off, I'll start there. I like Aiden Hill, but not in San Jose.
Is it a talent upgrade over Arizona, or...
At this point, I don't know.
In name brand, it is, right? But
yeah,
in actual talent, is it an upgrade? Is he going to have to stand on his head as much as he did there?
Yeah. He's a guy, like, maybe keep an eye on him next year, right? Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Burns has a good year next year and Carlson bounces back, and maybe they don't trade Thomas Hertl, because there's rumors swirling that Thomas Hertl's on the block and they're going to move him, right? So, and Evander Kane, we don't know what's going to happen there. Like, you know, at this point, I think we can assume he'll probably at least be at camp, but his teammates don't like him apparently. So, you know, I don't know. Lots of question marks in San Jose. I would just say Aiden Hill, like, we'll talk about him really quick here. His ADP is 168.5. He's only being drafted 11%. Last year he was not drafted. He was a streamer playing in Arizona. So my wins prediction here is 20 wins, 2 shutouts. And he's probably right around that mark, but I'll just take the under because I'm not real optimistic on the Sharks. Bruce, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the under. If he gets over, it's all going to be on his... It's all going to be because of him, because he's going to have to steal some games, because outside of maybe Brett Burns, I'm not high on any of these players whatsoever.
I mean, Evander Kane, he's such an enigma, right? Like, you like that... He's got category coverage. He shoots the puck a ton. He hits, scores goals, like all those things. But he's just so unreliable. You don't know when the next news report is going to come out that he did something ridiculous and he's done for how, you know, like, so I'm just fading him completely for that reason. But
likewise,
you know, he's got left wing, right wing eligibility. There's lots to like there, lots of reasons to like him, but I will not be drafting him.
No, I won't either.
Points prediction for him. I've got 31 goals, 62 points. Do you guys like the over-under there?
I'm going to say under.
I'll take under as well.
Yeah, I'm taking the under.
Okay. Excuse me. Thomas Hertl, I've got 28 goals, 61 points. Do you guys like the over under there?
I think I'm going under on pretty much everybody on this list.
Yep.
I was actually surprised. I was looking at Hertl's numbers the other night.
Well, Hertl's just the best one of the bunch, right?
Yeah, like really quickly here. So in 2018-19, he was on a... He put up 0.96 points per game. He had 74 points in 77 games and 35 goals. The next season, it was 36 points in 48 games. So he was on pace for 62 points. And then last year, he was 43 points in 50 games. He was on pace for 71 points. So, you know, two out of the last three seasons, he's been close to a point per game pace. If he sticks around, yeah, he's probably close to that points prediction, right? So I'd take the under as well, Bruce, I think. But if he gets traded, I mean, if he goes somewhere else where he can be more productive.
Yeah.
Next up here, Timo Meier, ADP of 170, and his ADP last year was 125.5. Points prediction, 25 goals, 59 points. Bruce, you're taking the under.
Yep.
John, you're taking the?
Under.
Okay, I'll take the under as well. Brent Burns. What do you guys think about Brent Burns for next season? Are you going to draft him, yes or no?
No.
Not at that ADP, no.
Yeah, his ADP is 128.9. He's 100% drafted right now. But that's a far cry from his ADP in 2020, which was 40.3. So his value has fallen drastically.
Yeah.
But I think he's primed for a bounce back. Like, he can't be much worse than he was last year.
I hope not.
So I don't know if you can get him late enough. If you can get him like around 150, you know, as your fourth defenseman, you know, yeah.
In like, that range, I would, but not at 128, I wouldn't know.
Okay. Do you guys like the over under on 12 goals and 50 points?
You know what? I'm going to be optimistic on Burns. I'm going to say over.
Me too.
And I'm going to be the opposite and take the under.
It's got to be that guy, hey?
Yep.
Okay. Seattle Kraken. I haven't looked at your guys' predictions yet. Okay, we'll leave those for now. But I don't obviously have any numbers to, you know, report from last season because they weren't in the league. But they've got 15 back-to-back sets this season coming up, and 46% of the games are played on off nights. So at the very least, I'd say keep an eye out on their goaltending. And maybe let's start there with Philip Grubauer. Excuse me. His ADP is 68.1, 100% drafted. And last year it was 98.7. So he's going quite a bit higher, I think just probably because people are expecting him to be the starter. So he's definitely a volume goaltender for Seattle this year. I've really warmed up on Seattle as a team. I think they're probably not going to score a pile of goals, but they're definitely going to prevent a lot of goals from being scored. So I've got them at 30. Well, I've got Grubauer at 30 wins and 4 shutouts. Do you guys like the over under there?
I'm going to take the under. I don't think he quite gets there.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Just not enough firepower on that team for you?
I don't think so, though. Like I said, the division's weak, but I'm not sure they're going to have... He's going to have to steal a few 1-0 games, I think, for them to do well.
Okay, that's fair. John, what do you think?
I'm going to take the under on that one as well.
Okay. Yeah, realistically, I'd probably take the under, but I'm going to take the over here just because I'm going to support my pick that Seattle do better than here than people expect them to. So, next up here, Jordan Eberle, right wing eligibility. He's going on average at 160. 2020, he was going at 168, so not much of a difference there. But I've got the over under set at 23 goals, 50 points. Do you guys like the over under, Bruce?
I'm going over. I think he'll reach 60 points. I think new team, he's going to go out there and prove that what he did, and he wants to go out there and prove what he did in on the island wasn't an anomaly. It wasn't product of the system, that he can still put up the points. And I think he will do that this year.
Yeah. And he's one of, like, you know, two or three guys that actually has some scoring pedigree, right, on that team. So I think he's going to get a lot of first unit power play time. I'll take the over on that one. John, do you like the over under?
I agree. I'm taking the over on that one.
Okay. Jared McCann, center left wing eligibility, ADP, he's going 161.5 and 7% drafted. So this guy, again, good value, I think. He's going late in the draft. He's not being drafted often. The fact that he's got dual eligibility is a steal. And I think what he did in Pittsburgh last year was in a fluke. When Malkin went down, he was playing in the top six. And like I've said before, I had him as a streamer. He played at almost a point per game pace. 22 goals, 57 points. John, do you like the over or under?
I'm going to take the over on that one. Good young player. I see him doing good things. Taking the over.
Okay. Good sleeper pick. Bruce, what do you think?
I'm going to go over on him too. I like what he saw. I liked what I saw there in Pittsburgh. Like you said, when Malkin went down, I'm going to go with the over.
Okay. Me too. Yanni Gord, this one's a little bit, disappointing to hear that he went down with injury. But he's got center right wing eligibility. He's going on average right now at 160. Last year, he was basically undrafted. I think he's going to get an opportunity to play in the top six and produce here for Seattle. So I've got the over under set at 22 goals and 48 points. Bruce, what do you think there?
I'm going to take the under. And the only reason why I'm qualifying that is because of his injury and the time off for surgery. He's going to be behind everyone else. So I don't think he's going to get to 48 points by the end of the season.
Okay. I'm going to take the over. But he might not get there, but he might play at that pace. Do you know what I mean? Once he gets back from injury, he might play at a 50-point pace kind of thing. So I guess that's how I would qualify it. But, John, what do you think? What are your thoughts on Gord?
I agree to both of you.
Perfect.
I'm taking the under. But for the same reason, Bruce's, but I also agree where I think he'll play at that 50-point pace. So,
yeah, he's done it the last
opportunity.
Yeah. No, probably someone you want to look at. Like, I don't know if he'll even get drafted by a lot of teams, but he's someone you'll definitely want to look at early in the season, right when he comes back from injury.
Yep.
Okay. I've got Jaden Schwartz here. You know, he's going pretty late. 181.4, 32% drafted. Definitely a guy who's got injury concerns pretty much every year. He's left wing eligible only. 20 goals, 50 points. Do you guys like the over under? Bruce?
I'm going to go with over, but just barely over. I'm like 55 points.
Yeah, I'll buy into that too. I think he's one of those guys, like I said earlier, who has some pedigree. He's played on winning teams. He's going to be given an opportunity. Like, he's one of the leaders of that team. He's going to play in the top six. Yep. So just by virtue of having some proper deployment, I think he'll put up 50-something points. John?
I agree. It'll be over, but just barely.
Okay. Another good, probably sleeper pick, maybe not a sleeper pick, but has some upside is Vince Dunn. ADP is 143, 90% drafted. Last year, he was going late at 201. Over-under here is 12 goals, 42 points. I'm going to take the over. John, what do you think?
I'm going to take the over as well.
Okay.
Make it unanimous.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is the year he breaks out.
I have a feeling that Giordano will not be with the team by season end if Seattle is not in the playoff hunt. They'll trade Giordano and Dunn. If he isn't given that spot already on the first power play, he'll get it when Giordano leaves.
Yeah, I agree. For sure. Last year of his contract, and he's going to want to try and win a cup somewhere, right? So,
yep.
Okay, let's move on to Vancouver. 23-29-4 record. 2.64 goals for per game, 3.34 goals against last year. Goals for was 25th at 44.8. Corsi for was 27th at 46.8. Special teams weren't great. Power play was 25th at 17.4%, and the PK was 17th at 79.8%. So I guess, looking at some of those numbers, it's easy to see why people like Ian, among others, are kind of down on the Canucks even after some of the moves they made, right? But I think they just had a rough season with COVID. It was just kind of a weird season. A lot of things happened there. Mm-hmm. I like some of the additions they've made. I like Connor Garland. I like OEL. I think Demko has a bounce back year. So I've got higher expectations for the Canucks this year. They've got 11 back-to-back sets this season, and 46% of the games are played on off nights. I'll start with Demko right away. ADP of 103.8, so he is going a bit higher in drafts now. Like, early mock drafts, he was going later, and people have wised up to that a bit. 30 wins, 3 shutouts, I'm going to take the over. John, what do you think?
I'm going to take the under. Still don't have high hopes for them.
Okay. Fair enough. Bruce?
I think you'll get there. I'm going to take the over, but it's just going to be slightly over because it's basically going to be – who's Demko's backup this year?
Halak? Yeah.
So, yeah, it's – I'll go with the over, but just barely over.
Okay. Yeah, he's right around 30 wins, I think. But, yeah, I'll take the over as well. Let's talk about Elias Pettersson. So his ADP over. Bruce didn't even have to think about it.
No, it's over. It's absolutely.
I looked at that number and I went, "Oh, that's low."
He's got a brand new wrist. He's going over. Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. 34 goals, 77 points. So Bruce taking the over. John, you're thinking over. You said that.
John's,
you think that number's low?
Over. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I looked at his numbers and that's kind of the range he's fallen into, but depends on health. Like, he's another one of those guys, and he's going right now on an average at 47.3. So, yeah, which is down from last year. Last year, he was going 25th overall.
If I can still get him in the fourth round, I'm taking him.
Yeah, I think if you can get him in the fourth round, that's probably it's a good pick with lots of upside. Yeah. But he's such an injury concern. He kind of scares me a bit too. So,
oh, it's just his wrist. Well, he's had a year or two now to fill out when he broke in as a rookie. Like, literally, you could probably blew a feather at him and knock him off. He was so small, right?
Yeah, he's pretty slight dude.
So he's had a couple of years to fill out, so he'll be great.
Okay. All right, I'll take the over then too. I don't know if I'll draft him there, but good upside. JT Miller, good category coverage guy, center left wing eligibility. He's going just slightly higher at 52 overall. 26 goals, 76 points. You guys like the over or under?
I'm going to go under.
Not a big JT Miller fan?
Just not sold on him, no.
Yeah, he's still kind of one of those players for me who I'm like, he's going at 52 overall. Like, it seems so high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sold. I'm going under.
Okay, let's check his numbers here too. Bruce, do you like the over under there? Or John, sorry. John.
I was going to say, Bruce already told you, man.
Oh, it's been a long show. Give me a break.
I'm taking the under.
Okay.
Certainly. I don't even think he's going to hit 70.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, hot take from John. Yeah, I'll take the over, but like, I'm just looking at his numbers. In 1920, he was at 1.04 points per game. He had 72 points in 69 games. And last year, he was at 0.87 points per game and a 71-point pace. So I think he's shown in Vancouver anyway, he can actually be a 70-plus point player. So I will take the over. Plus, I like the category coverage. That's my thoughts. John, do you like Brock Besser? Right wing eligible. Okay.
No. Actually, I'm still going to take the under on this one, too.
30 goals, 69 points. You're taking the under.
Yep.
Okay, he's way up too. He's going at 60.6 on average. Last year, he's going at 110.2. So I'll take the under as well.
Yeah, me
Bruce.
Too.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm taking the under too. I don't think he gets the 70 points.
Here's a pick I really like for next year. Connor Garland, left wing, right wing eligibility. He's going late right now at 174.6. He's only 79% drafted. The year previously, he was going past 200. And I think he's got 25 to 30 goal potential. So I've got the over-under here set at 26 goals and 62 points. If he gets first power play unit deployment, he's for sure over that, no question.
Absolutely.
I've read some reports from different guys saying they think he can be an 80-point player next year.
Yep, I believe that too.
So I don't know if I'm quite that high on him, but I do think he's going to be a great grab late in your draft. Keep an eye out for Connor Garland. I'm taking the over.
Definitely.
Okay, everyone's nodding approval. We'll take the over. Okay. Quinn Hughes, this guy, I have mixed feelings on. I know he's obviously an elite level defenseman, but he doesn't provide a lot of category coverage. He's a bit smaller. I think, I don't know. To me, he might be injury susceptible. ADP of 103.8. Like, there's just other defensemen, I guess, at that, or sorry, 44.5 is his ADP. So there's other defensemen at that range I'd rather take, right? Just my opinion there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, like 9 goals and 66 points. Do you guys like the over under for Quinn Hughes?
I'm going to go with the under on this one.
Yep. Me too.
He's going to be close. He's not going to be way off. He's going to be close. He'll probably break 60 points, but. And that ADP, I don't know.
That's what scares me, right? Like, it's not great value at 44.5. So, in a points league, yeah, good pick. But I think if you got category, if you're a banger league or anything like that, he's just, for me, that's too rich.
Agreed. I'm going to take the under on that one, too.
Okay. That brings us to, I think, our last team here, the Vegas Golden Knights. So, last year they missed out on the President's Trophy by 1 point, right? I think it was... to Colorado, their record 40-14-2, goals for 3.39, goals against 2.18, goals for percentage they're first at 60.9, Corsi for they were second at 54, power play was not good as, what did you call it, Bruce? Meh?
Yeah, it was a whole lot of meh.
Yeah, so they were 22nd overall in the power play. Their PK was first though. Brutal. Yeah, their PK though, they were first at 86.8, so kind of drastically different there on the special teams, but 13 back-to-back sets this season and 48% of their games played on off nights. So just like the most I think I've seen of some of the numbers I've looked at so far. First up, Mark Stone, ADP 42.2. He went around the same place last season. I've got 31 goals, 82 points. Do you guys like the over or under?
I think over. I think last year's loss to Montreal is you're going to see a slightly more what's the word I'm looking for?
Motivated.
There you go. That's the word I'm looking for. he's going to be more motivated. Again. He was not happy the way the season ended last year in his own performance and that too. So I think he'll be over a point per game for sure.
Okay, John, what do you think, Mark Stone?
I'm going to take the under just barely, but I'm going to take the under.
Yeah. I'll take the under too. I think what he did last year was a bit more of the exception than the rule. Like if I look at his numbers here again, 78 point pace in 2018-19, 79 point pace in 2019-20, and then a 91 point pace last year. Like, he's been over a point per game pace twice, or he's done it twice in his career. So not to say he can't do it. I just don't think it's going to happen next year. So I think he'll take a slight step back, but still close to a point per game. Max Pacioretty. I've always liked Max Pacioretty just for his shot volume. He's going a bit earlier than Mark Stone. He's going at 36.4, 100% drafted. I've got 34 goals and 75 points. John?
Under.
Under, okay.
Yep. Why? I don't know.
Just because.
That Vegas team, no one really seems to step out and put up the big numbers on that team, so I got a hard time with going over really on anyone here.
Okay. I think, yeah, he's not going to be significantly over that. Like I think he'll be right around there, but I'll take the under just because. Bruce, what do you think?
I'm going to go with the under two, but for me, it's more of an injury concern than it is anything. I don't think he's going to play a full season, so that'll. I think that's what's going to affect his point total.
He misses 6 to 15 games pretty much every year, so just kind of expect that with him. But he's good when he's in. So, Pietrangelo 49.1 on average for his ADP this year. Last year was 41.4. I've got 16 goals and 52 points, John. Tell me about Pietrangelo.
Wonderful defenseman, doesn't put up a whole lot of points. So he's right around where I'd put him, though, in your prediction there, 16 goals, 52 points. I'm still going to take the under, though.
Okay. Okay. Bruce?
I'm going to go with the under two, but I'm going to lump him and Theodore together here. Unless one of these two takes a hold of the first power play time, they're both going to be right around the 50-point mark because they're going to be swapping them in and out. For one of them to be over these point totals, one of them has to take the spot over the other. Otherwise, they're both going to, they're going to middle in the 45 to 50 point range, both of them.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm going to backpedal from what I had said previously. Like we were talking about Petrangelo versus Shea Theodore. I think Shea Theodore is probably going to take that number one power play role. And I think he's going to do a bit better this year. So I've got for him, it was 14 goals, 62 points. Like I'll take the over on that. I think Theodore has a big season next year. They finally just run with somebody on power play one and call it a day.
Yeah, they haven't yet. So hopefully someone's got to take a hold of it. If not, it's just going to be another meh year for the power play.
Yeah. And then last but not least, Robin Lehner, he's going at 18.6 on average.
Ouch.
That's, yeah. Like
way too high.
That's way too high for me.
Too high for me too.
The year before he's going at 55.8. I've got 30. Yeah. I've got 35 wins and 4 shutouts. Do you guys like the over or under?
If he's healthy, over. If he's not healthy, under.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. So like I that was based on a prediction of him playing 55 to 60 games. I think I actually used 55 games as the number and then winning 35 out of those 55 games.
Yeah.
If he can stay healthy, he'll hit 35 wins, but if he's not healthy, he won't get there.
I think he's done it, right? Like in Buffalo and I think in Long Island. Did he not play?
Well, Long Island he did. Buffalo, they didn't win enough for.
No, but he played 59 games in Buffalo in 16-17, 53 the next year. Mm-hmm. Then he played 46 in Long Island and then kind of we had shortened seasons after that, but yeah, I'll take the over. I think he can do it. And he's got the team in front of him to win. So
after listening to Nate, I have trouble. I'm having trouble now looking at goalies that early in the, draft. I just, if it was, let's say Hellebuck or Vasilevskiy. Yeah. I think that's okay. But, cause I took Leonard early last year in draft and I ended up riding Marc-Andre Fleury and Leonard spent most of the time on the bench. So,
you were lucky you were able to get both guys, right? Because that draft.
I took Leonard way early and I took Fleury like the second or third last because no one was taking him because they figured that Leonard was going to run with it, right? So.
Yeah. And I almost took Fleury just because, well, hey, it doesn't hurt to take him late in the draft, but same train of thought. And then, you know, you've only got one half of a tandem if they split time. So I left him alone, but that was interesting. I kind of the conclusion I've come to. And sorry, Nate, if you're listening, I don't think I'm going to go full zero G this year. I'm definitely going to fade goaltenders. I've left goalies late a couple times in mocks. Like I've done true zero G and once or twice I've come out with Cal Peterson and Mike Smith for my goaltenders, which you can make it work. Like my forward group was great. My defense was great. I just don't know, right? Like, If Cal Peterson and the Kings aren't what I hope they are, and if Mike Smith goes down with injury, then you're in big trouble, right? You're kind of just working the wire the whole time. So probably what I'll be looking at doing is somewhere between rounds 10 and 15, I'll probably start looking at a goaltender if I can snag like a Demko, a Jari, somewhere in that tier. That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yep.
And then I don't mind grabbing like a second or third goalie late, you know, with my last pick or something, but... Mm-hmm. That's just kind of, for me personally, that's what I found. That's my comfort level, but I still think zero G is a thing you can do and it can work. So
well, I think I'm in 3 or 4 this year and I think at least one of them, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Just to see, right?
Heck, I won with Martin Jones and John Gibson as my goalies 1 year. So,
so it can be done.
It can be done.
Yikes.
Okay, well, that's our fantasy previews for the Pacific Division teams. Let's just quickly go through our Pacific Division projected standings. For myself, I've got Edmonton finishing first with 112 points. That's a 54-24-4 record. I realize I'm probably dreaming in Technicolor here, but that's my prediction for the Oilers. I've got Vegas coming in at second, 105 points, followed by Vancouver at 94 points, Seattle at 92, LA at 90, Calgary at 86. And then Anaheim at 73 and San Jose at 71. Bruce, you want to rip through your guys?
So mine was pretty similar, although I have a slightly better outlook for the Flames than Devin does. So I went first. Well, first will be the Golden Knights. I think that's pretty obvious. Oilers will be second. Flames will be third. Canucks fourth. Seattle fifth. and then the Kings, Ducks, and Sharks rounding out the last three. I had a lot of trouble with the Flames, the Canucks, and the Kraken, where to put them, because I think those are going to be the three teams to watch for those last two playoff spots. I think it's going to be up and down through the entire season for those three fighting over that, those two spots.
I'm going to throw LA in that mix. I think those four teams, in positions three through six, are just going to be duking it out all season long.
I don't think LA is quite there yet.
That's okay. This is where we differ. I think LA can, I like the moves they made, and I think that they're going to make a push for a playoff spot this year. So, if you look, I've only got them, the point spread is 86 points for Calgary to 94 for Vancouver. So it's not a huge spread. I don't have a lot of love for Calgary right now. So, John, what's your outlook for the Pacific?
For me, I went with Edmonton going first in the Pacific there, followed, of course, by Vegas. I got Calgary after that, but I got them, I'm thinking, quite a ways back of the top two there. Then Vancouver, LA. I don't have a whole lot of high hopes for Seattle, so I got them coming in sixth in the Pacific there. And then Anaheim and San Jose, I got no love for either of those. So
that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, guys, is there anything else you want to talk about Pacific Division wise? Nope.
No. Okay. No.
All right.
Did you want to do the news?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, John, for reminding me. So just because we've skipped the news, the last podcast, and I was about to skip it again this year, episode. So just really quickly, Crosby underwent wrist surgery. He's expected to miss approximately 6 weeks. Additionally, Ron Hextall was unsure of the status of Evgeny Malkin ahead of the regular season. It's possible that both Sid and Gino were on the shelf to start the year, so keep an eye out for that. Fantasy impact for the Penguins, obviously, Malkin is dropping in drafts, so keep an eye on that. He can be had late. I think I took him at 135 last night in a mock draft. Him and Eichel are just sitting there. No one's touching them.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and for Crosby, I don't think his value is really impacted much here. He's going to miss, at most, it sounds like, 6 games to start the year. So, and his wrist will be fixed up. So, he should be fine.
Yeah, it's not affecting my draft position for Crosby at all.
No.
Malkin definitely fading, but Crosby is, I'm not changing my draft strategy on Crosby at all.
No. And the other thing I'll say there quickly is, sounds like guys like Teddy Bluger and Jeff Carter are going to be relied upon early in the season. So I'd say Jeff Carter is a streamer, at least for the first week or two.
He's going to be a sleeper one for them, I think.
Yeah. And that may, who knows, if he does well enough, that could extend deeper into the season too. So keep an eye on him as your last pick or early on in the season as a waiver wire grab. David Backes signed a 1-day contract to retire with the St. Louis Blues after a 15-year NHL career. Any thoughts there on Backes? I think don't have much to say about him, but good, solid career, good player.
Definitely.
Middle of the pack kind of guy.
Yeah. Zach Parise signed a contract with the New York Islanders. I'm not sure where he's going to fit in the lineup. My hope is he plays on the third line and they actually give Wahlstrom some time in the top six.
That would make sense. I agree with that.
Yeah. Yep. And then last but not least, Eric Gudbranson signed a 1-year, $1.95 million contract with the Calgary Flames. So a bit of toughness there that should make the Battle of Alberta a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, he's not going to be fantasy relevant, but it's going to make things a lot more interesting for any players playing against Calgary.
Yeah, he's a mean SOB, so he should be fun to watch. And that's all I had for news here this week, guys. It's kind of a slower week. There's a couple things, I guess, that happened today that I just didn't throw in there, but we're at 2 hours already, so we'll maybe call that an episode. Again, I'll include links for Verbero Hockey at the bottom of the show notes here. I've also included all of our links for the How to Win Your Fantasy Hockey League series. Next week, we're going to move on to the Metro Division Fantasy Hockey Preview. We've got Chris Wassel coming on as our special guest. So I'll have a full rundown on Chris, but he's joining us here for our next episode, and it sounds like Tyler is going to join us as well. So fantastic. Should be lots of fun on Sunday. Keep an eye out for that one. If you guys need to get in touch with us, fantasyhockeyhacks@gmail.com. We're on Instagram, fantasyhockeyhacks, and we're on Twitter at FHHacks. And Bruce, John, thanks, guys. This is a fun show. I was really excited to have Andy on, and hopefully the listeners enjoy it.
You bet. Yep. It was a great show.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And more good stuff to come, so stay tuned. All right. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
Take care, everybody.